This is The Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast. The new episode available each week at thehollywoodoutsider.com. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or your podcast app of choice. My name is Aaron Peterson. I'm going to be your host for a special episode of The Hollywood Outsider. As our loyal listeners know, every once in a while we like to bring you interviews with independent filmmakers, give you an insight into what goes into getting their films made, as well as insight into the respective film itself. This week we're talking with the co-writer and director of Ripped. It's a comedy that tells the story of two free-spirited stoners who, after smoking some top-secret alien pot from Area 51, created by the CIA in 1986, they find themselves shot into the future deep into 2016. That's right, 30 years later. Then they basically have to walk around, find their footing again, reconnect with their old lives, and try to open a chili pot restaurant. That's right, it's chili infused with pot. And now I'm hungry, so that happened. The film stars Russell Peters and Faison Love, as well as Alex Meneses. The film was directed by Brad Epstein, and that's who we're going to talk to here in just a minute. And it should be noted that Brad was formerly a studio exec, so he worked within the studio system and decided to cast all that aside and become a filmmaker, directly involved in the film. He wanted to be a director. He wanted to be a writer. He wanted to be involved in the process, more creatively involved, I would say. As he talks about, he was involved in Ladder 49, Invincible, Dan in Real Life, and one of my favorite movies of all time, About a Boy. So here he talks about making that decision, the journey he's had in Hollywood, and getting Ripped made. You can now find Ripped in select theaters and on video on demand, and you can find more information at rippedmovie.com. That's rippedmovie.com. Without further ado, take a listen to my exclusive interview with Ripped director Brad Epstein. Hey, Brad, how are you?
Hey, Aaron. Pretty good. No complaints today yet?
Not yet. One thing I always ask anybody I talk to is, when did you know this is what you wanted to do? You wanted to be a filmmaker.
Yeah, it's funny. I was fortunate enough, my stepfather was a literary agent at William Morris, so I was able to see that at a young age from five. Mm-hmm. But I have to say, it was really not until about 5 or 6 years ago. I was a studio executive. I've been a producer. I ran Randy Harlan's company. And it really came to a point where I think I was brave enough to realize that I want to direct movies, that I was not happy being a producer and giving my thoughts over to other people, where I worked with immensely a lot of talented people. Clearly, I worked with Robert De Niro for 10 years at Tribeca. Mm-hmm. So I experienced a lot of, what a great learning ground and stuff like that. But I also saw the other side. So I guess making a long story even longer is that I was that studio executive. I had people sitting on the other side looking at me saying, I want to direct films. And I was that cynical person going, great, I'll see you at Starbucks or something. So I got the balls enough to say I'm frustrated with some of the filmmakers I was working with and the delay, that I'm going to take my life into control and I'm going to write this screenplay. And I wrote it with a friend of mine, Billiam. I went under a pseudo name and no one knew it was me until we got the screenplay to a place where we got it out to people and it was getting positive response. And actually, I did go under my pseudo name to a couple of places where I wasn't allowed in because people said, I went to a management company, was interested in me and my writing partner as writers. I go to the front desk and I give them my real name, which is Brad Epstein, but it's not my, but the management company has me under the fake name. And of course, the security guard looks at me and goes, yeah, you sure, guy. You know how many people come here trying to get their screenplay up there? Anyways, the confusion was. So, long story, I just decided to do it and take the leap. So I would say about 5 years ago was really about, I want to direct movies.
Wow, that is such a different journey than most independent directors have.
No, I know, and it's funny because I did listen to a couple of your podcasts. It was, I worked at Disney. I was a studio executive. I did Ladder 49 as a studio executive. I worked with Wahlberg. I did, Wahlberg was Invincible. Joaquin was Ladder 49. Lindsay Lohan was Adventures of a Teenage Drama Queen. And then I went on to, I produced About a Boy, Dan in Real Life, Ghost of Girlfriend's Past. None of those movies I was frustrated with.
Oh, man. That's one I wanted to actually bring up. And I know we're going to talk about Rip, but before we get there, you produced Dan in Real Life, uh-huh, like you said, and About a Boy, which is one of my favorite movies. So what is it about producing that is so much different than the directing?
Well, first of all, thank you. I mean, I have hands off to really, it's really on the page. And Dan in Real Life with Pierce, who wrote the original, and then Peter Hedges, who's a writer, director who did, you know, wrote Gilbert Grape and all that, they really wrote something special, and it was there from the beginning. And of course, you know, with About a Boy, you had Nick Hornby, mm-hmm. based on his book. So I was fortunate enough to have those kind of movies from a producing standpoint. Now, what was the main question of that?
how did that, what was the difference in that for you? Because you've produced these large movies and you move into directing an independent feature. What was the change for you? I mean, because I assume it's hard for you because you've been in charge of these and now you kind of have to go about getting the funding and doing things a lot differently than you had done them previously.
Right. I mean, because, studio's easy. I mean, not easy, but yeah, the money's there, you know. Mm-hmm. Independent financing, you're going around. So yeah, I had my producer's hat on to find financiers. And once I did that, I am a bit of a control freak, but I was able to, I have a producer by the name of Suzanne Weinhardt, who is brilliant, and she's really my hands-on person to do that. So once I was able to get the financing and kind of get the producing and get some of the casting, and I was lucky enough to have Edie Belasco cast my movie, the producing aspect went to Suzanne, and I was ready to put on that director's hat. Mm-hmm. It's different. I went from the point of taking 10% of what I was making yearly to become a writer-director. By the way, I just had twin girls, and I have a six-year-old daughter.
Oh, wow.
So I have a wife that really believed in me and said, let's do this. And for me, producing is really the pre-production of producing is the strongest part when it comes to creative and all that. Once you're on the set, you really rely on that one producer. And for me, that was Suzanne. And that producer is really getting the nuts and bolts and helping you get your creative vision all the way through. And the beauty of some of that is that I don't have interference from the studio. It could be good and bad.
I'm sure you have plenty of experience with that. I got to commend you, man. That's a big gamble for you, and kudos for even taking that chance. That's impressive.
Well, thank you. I mean, yeah, I'm not going to say it's not scary, okay? It's scary, but I love it, and I'm excited by it, you know, and obviously Ripped is more of a stoner comedy if you were to look at Dan in real life or About a Boy.
A little
which,
bit.
You know, I hope to be moving as a movie director in more, you know, to do more movies that I love comedies. And I love movies that have heart, you know, obviously like Broadcast News is one of my favorites. Mm. And I love Animal House.
There you go. Combine those two and make a movie, Broadcast Animal House. I think that would be a fantastic movie.
With a little Blazing Saddles in there.
There you go. So what took you from producing the kind of films that you had done to directing basically a stoner comedy? I mean, a pot-smoking, time-traveling stoner comedy. What about that appealed to you?
What appealed to me was the idea of how the world had changed in 30 years. And I thought it would be funny because what happened, it was really just what happened if somebody was stoned and or just like comatose and woke up in the world. And look at all the changes that happened in the last 30 years. And I'd seen some time travel movies, but I figured, let's reverse it. Let's start in 86 and get to 2016. And I love the idea of these two guys that are 17-year-old brains and 47-year-old bodies trying to figure out Google, trying to figure out Facebook. They actually think that Craig from Craigslist is a real human being.
That was pretty funny.
You know, and the best part, obviously, is that I love that my folks actually came to me. Well, my folks are in their 80s, right? Mm-hmm. And was curious about getting some marijuana for my dad, his back problem. That's the first marijuana conversation I've had with my folks.
That's fantastic.
It's interesting. You know, CNN did those big medical reports, and it's now acceptable and all that. And I do think, you know, I am a pro. I do think marijuana is helpful and used in the proper way.
Yeah. So did you do all your research in Colorado then?
No, I have my... You the way Faison got his license, the same way I got my license.
That's great. So who had the idea to make this Area 51 pot? Where did that come from?
That came from Billiam and I when we were writing it. I mean, because that's really the one give, obviously, right? Mm-hmm. Stoned and comatose. Everything else I tried to ground in somewhat of reality from comedy. I know that that's far-fetched from where we are, but I kind of want to give a human aspect to it. So, yeah, it was just like, let's make this weed the most powerful weed ever, and there's always been this crazy stuff about, you know, Area 51. So let's just add to the folklore there. And that's where this weed came from.
So when you're making a pot comedy, are there certain tropes that you felt you both needed to incorporate as well as some that you wanted to avoid?
I didn't want to do the typical, you know, the typical stoner comedy as much as I like, and I like a lot of those. I think I wanted to avoid dude stuff a lot, you mm-hmm. know, the kind of stoner talk dude.
Mm-hmm.
So that was something I really kind of wanted to avoid in doing this, and that the world has really has changed, and that these are just guys that are just, I wanted to just show how funny, like what people thought, you know, they thought about bottled water in 1986 and how kids were talked to and thought of in the world. And I just wanted to show, like, here we are now, and that there is bottled water that is a huge success. There are coffee shops that are in the world, and that I wanted to just say that the people, you know, just imagine, who knows where the world would go to and not be stifled.
I like the Skype when they recognize Skype for the first time and they're talking to her dad and he's talking to them and they think it's what the hell is this? This kind of magic. Yeah. That my parents are like that. So that was actually pretty accurate.
It is pretty funny. I mean, I do hope that, you know, it's like those related. You're absolutely right, because my parents on Facebook are, you know, I remember, like, oh, grandma died or something like that. Happy face, emoji, emoji, emoji. I'm like, oh, they don't even know how to do that right. I do like that.
Tell me about how you settled on your three leads, Russell Peters, Faison Love, and Alex Meneses.
Yeah, it was interesting. Well, I made the movie for a low amount of money, and I really wanted to find somebody. I literally was driving down the road on Culver Boulevard to my writing spot, and I kept seeing this face of this Indian mug with all this graffiti all over his face, and it was Russell Peters' announcement for his next Netflix thing. I had not even known. I didn't even know who Russell Peters was. That's how stupid I was.
Really?
And then I, of course, go on and go, holy shit, this guy's got making like $30 million a year traveling the world doing stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy, right? So I watched his stuff, and what I want, and what Russell is, and similar to what I am, is a man-child, you know, Peter Pan syndrome. Russell has that. He's still, he just can't get out of his way of being a child. In the greatest ways, you know, and he's a fantastic father. He has a 6-year-old daughter, and I was like, this guy is my guy. He's a 17-year-old kid stuck in a 47-year-old body. And then, you know, Faison is always the underrated secret weapon, I've always felt. But it was really Russell who encouraged me to really seriously consider Faison. And I think because of their friendship, they've known each other for a while. And I think that came across in the movie, and that they had incredible trust with each other when it comes to comedy and improvising, which is something I think is really important.
Mm-hmm.
Because Russell is both of those guys improvise.
Oh, so they were friends before.
They've known each other. Yeah. So it was Russ, and I was a huge fan of Faison's, obviously. I mean,
yeah, he's hysterical.
You can't remember him from Elf. And so Faison and I met, and I was fortunate enough to be able to cast him. You know, and Alex is just, you know, it was on Everybody Loves Raymond, I believe it was. She was the sex symbol on Everyone Loves Raymond, and I remembered her from that. And I wanted, you know, I wanted to make it a diverse cast anyway, so Alex was just perfect for it. And she was able to play with the big boys, these crazy nuts. She was able to wrangle in those two.
Yeah, it was a good mix. It was a good mix.
Yeah.
So what is everybody smoking? I mean, obviously they're not going to smoke marijuana on set. So what is it? I know some people always wonder that when they see these pot comedies. So I'm kind of curious as to what you guys did.
It's just oregano. It's that healthy stuff. You know, the prop department, there's a whole, you can mail order that stuff to do all of that. So it's just a natural herb that you would be smoking, not illegal stuff at all. It's more like hemp stuff.
Hmm.
And the vaping was, you know, that was the same thing. That was all fake oils in there that are natural, so no one's inhaling anything. No actor was hurt on the set or harmed.
Well, they wouldn't know anyway. They'd be numb.
They wouldn't know anyway, exactly.
Is it hard to shoot? This is your first feature directing. Is it hard to shoot with kind of this pig pen haze everywhere you go?
With the what? With
the smoke, the pig, like the haze?
No.
No?
No, you mean We added some smoke in there. I think, it, you know, it's challenging. You're talking about just from visually, a visual standpoint?
Yeah, just a visual standpoint in terms of shooting with when you have smoke around all the time, yeah.
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge for that really was in the van, you know, 1986 when we smoke up that van and really kind of matching all of that. We had that. It was pretty well done because of the limited budget that we had, but we added, we were able to equalize it in post-production to add more smoke so it, when the, you know, so equaled out in between shots.
Gotcha.
But it does become a hassle once in a while if you really want, you know what I mean? If you really want to smoke up a place and try to match it.
I'm sure. So what was
it's
the...
like having kids on set.
It's like having kids on set?
I said it's like having kids on set. You're always waiting for the smoke to equalize.
So that's funny.
Like waiting on the kids.
What was the most challenging aspect for you then? This is your first project as a director. What was the most challenging aspect?
Shooting every day. I shot the movie in 20 days.
Oh, wow.
You know, on a, that was challenging. You know, I would do three moves sometimes in a day. That was really challenging. But I loved it. I loved it. I hope to God to never have to do that again, but I loved it.
So what do you plan on doing now? I know I've got to let you go here in a minute, but what do you plan on doing now that this is out? Once the reception is died down and the release has died down a little bit, do you have another project in mind? Or?
Yeah, no, I have two other movies that I'm casting right now. I just moved one around because of an actress availability. So I just finished a screenplay that we're moving ahead with that is kind of in the world of it's really about being a parent and what these parents get up to when they send their kids away to sleepaway camp. It's got more heart to it. It's really got more heart to it. Hmm. And so that's the next movie I plan to start shooting this year, the end of the year. Well, kind of Bad Moms meets The Hangover.
Just don't call it sleepaway camp because that'll trigger the wrong memories.
No, it has nothing to do with camp. I'm getting rid of those kids by page 10. They're gone.
All right, so last question. Now that you've done it, now that you've come from the studio end and you've now worked in the independent end, is there anything that you were surprised by or you didn't expect or you didn't see coming ahead of time?
No, I think I'd pretty much seen it all.
Yeah?
There was nothing, you know, I mean, obviously people's behaviors and stuff like that, understand and stuff, but more, no. I don't know.
That's good. I mean, I was just kind of curious because you're coming from the studio environment and you're going to the independent field. I didn't know if that would be a big, if you would find some things that you weren't used to or you didn't count on. And
I had to pay for things. I had to pay for things.
That makes a big difference.
You know, in the studio, you've got the credit card. When I was at Disney as a studio executive, I had a studio car. They gassed my car. They washed my car. They paid for every meal I had. Okay. Mm-hmm. I have an office assistant. You know, I mean, it was fantastic in that kind of world. And now I don't have any of those luxuries, but I don't look at those as luxuries. I actually looked at those as distractions for me in my kind of creative process. I kind of have to just stay away from that and just write and do what I love. I don't need all the fanfare that comes with it.
That's great. I got to let you go, Brad, but I do want to tell you congratulations on the release and... Really, I'm very impressed that you took a chance like this. That's great that you creatively took that chance.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it, and thanks for the interview. And hopefully, we'll speak again on my next movie.
Looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Thank you.
Take care.
Okay. Take care. Bye.
There you go, guys. I hope you enjoyed that. That was my interview with director Brad Epstein of the film Ripped. Once again, it's available at rippedmovie.com. And again, kudos to Brad, man. That is a big chance to take. Kudos to him for getting it done, and best of luck on his future endeavors. Once again, thank you guys for listening to the Hollywood Outsider Podcast. We try to bring you these interviews with filmmakers in the world of independent cinema when we can, so I really hope you enjoyed this one. Remember to subscribe and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcast app of choice. Our normal show has a new episode each week and is available at thehollywoodoutsider.com. This is Aaron Peterson reminding you that the next time you head into the theater, or sit comfortably on your couch and watch Ripped to buy popcorn. We'll be right back.